Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Inside the episode today, David and I go inside episode 113, Cost of Entry. David, how are we today?
I'm doing great, T. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So in this episode, The Cost of Entry, you referenced a quote early on about putting in 10,000 hours to become an expert of a certain thing. So that 10,000 hour rule was first proposed by a Swedish psychologist named Anders Ericsson, yeah. And then it was made more mainstream in Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers. Yeah. So basically what it says is, in essence, everyone has the ability to be great as long as they can put in the time to master the skill of their choice. So now there's different theories out there around whether or not this is true. First of all, let's get your candid take on that 10,000 hour rule one more time. What do you think about that?
I think it's 100% true. I haven't seen it not be true. And I've been doing this for 20 years. And then, you know, and then 7 years before that, really working on myself and studying other people that were successful, I just haven't seen it not be true. If you're an artist, you're a musician, you're an actor, you're an actress, you're an architect, you speak on stages, like, you're only going to get really good when you put in the hours. You got to put in the reps. That's it, period.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Know? Like, you wouldn't expect to be ripped in tone because you ate broccoli and beef one night and went to the gym once. Right? You got to put in the thousands of hours. Look at you. You transform your entire body, but you put in thousands of hours working on yourself and watching your diet and limiting your alcohol and, you know.
Yeah, totally.
It didn't happen overnight. You didn't lose 40 pounds overnight.
No, you don't. And it's not like there's a clock that you have in your office that says, okay, you're up to 8,376 hours. I mean, the 10,000 hours may be just a number that they pulled out of the ether, but it's what you're doing is you're working towards it, and you're working for years and years and years. In essence, it would take you 20 years to put in this type of time. And that's what you've done in your business. You know, this rule has affected you, I can tell, probably early on in your business. How did you use, let's just take the 10,000 hour rule as a starting point. How did you use that early on in your business as you work to master sales?
Well, let's look at it like this. Let's say what this is. If you worked 10 hours a day, every day of the year, it would take you 2.7 years to hit the 10,000 hours.
Right.
Consistently. Yeah. That's no days off. That's not missing one day. And it's 10 hours a day, right? So it's not a small feat. Now, it doesn't mean, like you said, I will eventually hit success, boom, as soon as the clock ticks 10,000. No, you'll progressively get there.
Right.
But you will have mastered that thing at 10,000 hours. So I put in those kinds of hours in the beginning of my business selling. Literally put in those kinds of hours. Now, it wasn't 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. But it was. There were days where it was 18 hours. There were days where it was 20 hours. And there were days where it was seven, right?
Sure.
But I worked as much as I could. I spoke on every stage that I could. And here's what I did. Let's look at my skill sets that I'm core strong. First, I've put in probably several hundred thousand hours in study, okay? I put in the 10,000 hours in study way before I ever even started the business. So there's that. Then it was selling. So way over 10,000 hours. I couldn't imagine how many hours I have in selling at this point, but the 10,000 hours in the beginning was definitely, you know, there. I'm a master salesperson. I can sell anywhere, anything, like in any platform, like I'm proficient at.
Sure.
Coaching. I am a master coach. I'm probably a master coach. But I have probably a few hundred thousand hours in coaching. I mean, over 20 years with the amount that I've coached, I can't imagine how many hours that, you know, are that actually in, you know, entails. Like, we're like, you know, in 9 years, we've done over, we're almost at 1,000 VIP days in 9 years.
Right.
They were 8 hours in the beginning. They're 4 hours now. You know, just that. And then coaching in between all of that and coaching from the stage and, right, you know, like, it's just, it's crazy how many hours. And then how many hours in building the business and coming up with ideas for what are we doing with the company? What are we doing with programs? How are we setting up events? So almost all of my time is spent doing those things. Very little of my time is doing something else. And here's what I run into. It's not that there's other things that I don't like to do, but there isn't anything that I like to do as much as this. So when I am doing something else that I enjoy, if I'm doing it a little bit long, like when you go on vacation or something, there's always a little niggle in the back of my mind that's going, this is time you can't get back. Like, you could be coming up with a new idea for the company. You could be building a new company. But here you are sitting on a beach with a margarita, or here you are touring Europe or whatever. And I push those voices out because everybody needs recharge time. I do as much as the next person does. And it's not something that I feel guilty about or I'm beating myself up about. It's just something that occurs to me, like, yep. And I do it in a healthy way, because there was a time in my life where all I wanted was the time off.
Right.
Right? Because I hated what I did so much. I wanted the time off. And I got to the point where that became scary. Like, if I don't change this, I'm going to be fucked for the rest of my life. I mean, you do something for a certain amount of time, it's going to be really hard to change it. You know what I mean? So I changed that. I developed a good work ethic. And I never wanted to go back to that idea. But people coming in with the idea that, oh, I went to a seminar on sales, and now I'm going to be good at sales. Or not understanding that sales is more than just getting somebody to say yes and getting your credit card. That's actually fear in there. It's lack. It's lack thinking, right? A person is afraid that they're not going to make sales. So it's like, sell everybody that says yes. And it's like, no, you don't. That is not the way to do it. That you're in business to help people. That's not helping anybody except for you. That's really selfish.
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely. And that the title of the episode, Cost of Entry, obviously, you know, that's a lot of people come into, let's say, our industry, for example, not fully knowing the dedication and the drive that it takes to be in business for yourself. A lot of people that we come across, maybe we're in a corporate job, they got out, they're going to start a business of some sorts, and they think people are just going to come and knock on their doors. And that's just not how it works. And maybe there's one person out there who would differ from that, but the majority of people, they don't understand the commitment, the sacrifice, the drive, the dedication that it takes to be able to get there. And I think that's kind of the sort of theme that's woven through this entire episode. In the episode, you talked about saying what you want and then doing what it takes to get there. Like, people dream big, yet they don't want to put in the work that it takes to get those dreams achieved. What would you say to someone to sort of jolt them into reality around that idea of, well, I've got this big dream, but you mean I have to actually work to get it?
Yeah. So, you know, the idea for me is if I hear that, if a person says that to me in one way or another, my response to them is to really go back and take a look at what it is that they want. I know that generally when I hear that, I'm looking at a person who is basically dealing in escapism in their mind. They want the end result because they think that's going to change how they feel, or it's going to change their family life, or it's going to change their relationship with their spouse, or they want to look good to their friends. Because the truth is that you're spending the 10,000 hours in the process, right? You're not spending the 10,000 hours at the win. The win is a moment in time. And, you know, once that day passes where you hit whatever goal it is, you're starting over. You got to do it again, and you got to do it again, and you got to do it again. So it's the process that the person has to be in love with. I tell people all the time, look at whatever business you're thinking that you want to be in. If you don't love the process, don't get into it. Because you'll be miserable. You know, an actor or an actress is on stage or in front of the camera less time than they are looking for the role. You know,
it's true.
A musician is practicing more than they are on stage. You know, they're in studio doing take after take after take after take after take, writing, you know, locking themselves away, writing music, coming up with lyrics, learning how to harmonize with the band, getting the band tighter. You know, they're promoting. You know, well, today they're doing a lot of it themselves, but
right. Yeah, and we, the people who are out in the audience viewing this, are like, oh, it just comes so easy to them. We don't see the process. We see the finished product. But the person on stage is, that's a moment in time. I love that. That's so great. And they're able to perform, but then they know they got to go back and fix this piece or that piece, and they're constantly growing, and that's where those hours amass.
I saw an interview. I'm not going to say who was doing the interview because I don't remember the interviewer. I'm thinking one person, but I think I'm incorrect. They were interviewing Robert Plant, the lead singer from Led Zeppelin. And Led Zeppelin had a notorious, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll career. And if you listen to, like, the stories from history, you would think that they'd be up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, doing all the drugs, doing all the women, you know, and then being on stage, you know, every other night at a gig, right? And the guy said to Robert, he's like, you know, it's fun to think about those things. He said, and I'm sure that part of that was, there was some reality to that. He's like, but you would never be able to get up there and sing every night if that was the case. And he's like, yeah, nobody ever comes to that realization. Like, right. It couldn't have been exactly the way that it was. He had to get his sleep. While every other person on the stage was playing an instrument, Robert's instrument was his voice. So there's no way that he was up smoking and drinking,
right,
and fucking and, you know, doing all that stuff day after day or night after night after night after night, and then getting up on stage and putting on a show.
Yeah, we want to believe in the myth.
Yeah. That's what it is. And like you nailed it right there. People have a myth in their head about what success is, and it's the process. It's all the dirt that you're doing day after day after day after day, that's where the saying, like, successful people do what unsuccessful people won't do, that's where the won't do comes in,
right?
Right? It is from morning to night in between the highlights of their career.
Yeah, that's great. All right, let's close out with this one. You had a very passionate take on this episode around selling those who can't benefit from your product or service just to line your own pockets. You called it preying on the ignorant. I loved it because having been on the inside for the past 10 years and seeing how you run your business, you do run it with the highest of integrity, and it is a breath of fresh air. You sell, obviously, because that's what keeps you in business, but you do it compassionately, and you do have the client's best interest at heart. Now, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Is that something that you're born with, or is that more of a learned behavior? And as a side note to that, where did yours come from?
I think it's a little of both. I think that you have to have some kind of an internal ethic, whether you're born with it or you learn it as a child. And it's, even if a person does that, they can get off track at some point in their life. Mine developed because I'm really good at selling. I can sell anybody. And I know that I can, and I know that I'm really good at it, and I know that that can be abused. When I first got into this industry, I was taught that anybody who says yes is a fair sale. And it was explained to me that the responsibility, whether they do anything with it, is theirs. And there is some truth to that part, right? The responsibility with anybody is that it's their responsibility to do it. But when you're selling something that you flat out know they're not going to or don't have the capability to use, you're being unethical, period. I don't care what anybody says, because you're not accepting responsibility for what it is that you're putting out there. And when I was talking about the thing with my mentor, when he took me on, what I didn't mention was, When I say that I didn't have the background, that's true and not true. True in my mind that I didn't have the background that said that I could run my own company, because I hadn't done that yet. But when I look at it, I think to myself, you know, he took a chance on me. There were many, many times where I had personal issues going on in my life that probably would have put most people out of business. And knowing that I, well, not probably. I've actually seen people that had some of the same issues that I had as I was growing my company go out of business because they either couldn't or wouldn't overcome them. So you can't predetermine that, right? You can only kind of look at what you think the person is going to do and then look at what they are doing once you start working with that individual. But for me, I had seen so many scams, so many let's just take everybody's money, so many overpromise, underdeliver scenarios in the industry that I'm part of. It made me sick. I was actually very disheartened because there was the whole part where you start studying it and you kind of make gods out of all the people that you're listening to because you've never met them, you don't know anything about them. Then if you go a little further and you start getting involved working in the industry, which I did, you start to meet these people. And it's not like, oh, yeah, there's a little difference between that person on stage and that person, you know, out at a dinner party or a cocktail party or something like that. There were flagrant, like, mischaracterizations of these individuals. Like, they were not anything that they said that they were. And when I saw not just one, but like almost all of them being this way in private, I was very disappointed. I was to the point where I thought to myself, maybe this is not the industry that I want to get involved in, because that's not what I want. That's not what I want to be. Remember, part of my, and I've said this publicly many times, part of the belief that I grew up with as a kid was that you had to be either uber smart and know a lot of people to be successful, or you had to be a crook. So I was taught that you had to be a crook. And it was, for me, it was one of those things like, no, you don't. You don't have to be a crook, right?
Yeah.
So when I started to see it being reflected back to me, I was like, fuck. What is this? Is this true everywhere? And I said, you know, I'm going to do this in a way that upholds the highest ethical standard that I possibly can. And I've always tried to do that. I have made mistakes. I've taken on clients I shouldn't have taken on. But we've always tried to make that right. You know, again, you don't know 100% until you start working with somebody. You don't know if somebody buys a toaster, you don't know that they're going to plug the thing in. You know, right. I mean, they come back and say, I want a refund. It didn't work. And then you find out, well, they never plugged it in. They didn't use it, right? It'd be like, well, duh, you got to use the fucking thing. But here's the bigger question. Why didn't they plug it in? Were they not told? They didn't know? And you might be thinking, come on, it's a toaster. It's a metaphor. The idea is, are you selling somebody something with just the end goal in mind? Are you selling the polish, the bright, shiny object? Or are you telling them what it has to be done in order to get there? You know, if a person is, and especially in my industry, if a person's not willing to have that conversation, that's the first clue that you shouldn't be selling them. So to be nervous about walking into that conversation, like I'll scare them, they won't buy, you shouldn't be hiring them if they can't have that conversation. You should be scared.
That's right. You know? Yeah, that's great. Well, this episode, I mean, this is easily, I'm going to put this in my top five of all the episodes you've done. It's so good. It's so timely. It's so needed. And your passion around it is evident in what you said. Like, you really brought it on this episode, and you always bring it, but there seemed to be a little bit more for this one. So I thank you for that. I'm sure the listeners thank you for that. And I appreciate you stepping inside.
You got it. Thanks, T.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.